Welcome to Paradigm Shifters, everyone. This is Veronica Entwistle. And Paradigm Shifters is a really interesting program. I say interesting for me because I get to talk to and interview some amazing people that are making a difference in the consciousness of our species at this time on the planet. And our guest, our wonderful, exciting guest who's been actually the very first guest we ever had on Paradigm Shifters, and also someone who's come to visit us as he progresses through his work, is a music healer, but I also want to say a musician, and I also want to say a wizard of sacred geometrics and many other things. Welcome to the show, Randy Masters.
Yeah, thank you, Veronica. Yes, indeed.
You do more than one thing, Randy.
Well, this is a lifetime where I'm, you know, synthesizing many different lifetimes and connecting dots that in other lifetimes, maybe I explored each dot, and then it was time to start connecting those dots in a new way.
Well, let's right away talk about what your website is called, because I think that does encapsulate a lot of your reach into the world and beyond. And your website is called Resonant Living.
Well,
right?
Well, that's my company name. My old website is universalsong.net. Universalsong, SONG.net. I'm having a new one built, but things have been so busy, it's a bit delayed. But it will be up and happening with lots of other things that were not there in my previous website.
Well, I liked it. Well, let's go back to the term resonant living. I want you to explain what that is to people at home so they really get a sense of this broad spectrum of what you offer.
Well, that title is an umbrella for all the different things that I'm in, different categories, things that I make, and so on, that when somebody brings that into their life, it increases the resonance in their house, their home, their rapport, their car, their business, whatever that is. So resonant living is about bringing harmonically tuned items into one's environment and reality.
Well, you know, we do a meditation in which we use sacred geometrics shapes. So that also increases the resonance, the harmonious resonance in people, doesn't it? Even though it's
abstract. Visualizing them.
Yeah.
You don't have to have the presence of an artifact, but you can. Mm-hmm. And they're training wheels too. I mean, ultimately, as light beings, we don't have artifacts that we carry around with us necessarily. I mean, look at the dolphins. You know, what do they have? That, you know, so.
Their resonance they carry with them, don't they?
Yeah, and they have command over time space, at least certain of the more conscious ones do, to create things. And so these objects all have different angles in them if they're the geometric ones, and those angles bend light in different ways and tune the environment. They tune the environment, and sitting on a desk, like a paperweight, you know, these are auspicious paperweights, right? And just sitting there, it's doing something. And sometimes you want a paperweight that's tuning up your office, but you don't want to dialogue about it with all the various constituents and so on that come in. You know, it's just nice sitting over there in the corner, smiling at people should they notice. And so sometimes you want things to be very discreet, but tuned. And so I have things that hang up in the room and things that sit around, like, you know, like paperweights and sacred geometry jewelry that people can wear and things you can put in a drawer and nobody sees it. Mm-hmm. And yet it's having an effect on the environment just by being somewhere with an intent, that you've activated it in your intent, like putting a symbol behind a mirror or putting a symbol behind a photograph on the wall. And people come into the room, they don't see the symbol, but something is active up there behind.
So the symbol behind the mirror could be sort of a sacred geometric shape, something
like
that?
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I use things like, you know, like Ibrahim Karim's biosignatures and different shapes that he has. He has ones for different archangels and things, and he's got them for all the organs in the body. And I mean, you name it, different kind of light language symbols that he's brought through, that he's become famous for. and apply them to healing. You know, even
and what's
writing
his
this,
name, Abram?
Abraham with an I, I-B-R-A-H-I-M, Karim, K-A-R-I-M. Mm-hmm. You can find him on biogeometry or, you know, he's very well known. He was an architect in Egypt. He's living mostly in Canada and does things around in the world. And he has a wonderful couple books. One of them is Back to a Future for Mankind, Back to a Future for Mankind. He's a friend of mine, on co-leading trips to Egypt. On one, we did a big workshop down there in Cairo with him. And when he comes up to the Bay Area and other places in where I can go, he often has me talk about the sacred number aspect of biogeometry and the musical applications of biogeometry and sacred numbers that create resonances. And I use these numbers in my work. Like, now you can apply this, you know, we were talking about objects, but now we're for this moment.
Well,
we're
just looking. Before we jump away from that, I'm just thinking you went to Egypt with him and you've led groups of people over to Egypt. But then we're talking about the shapes, geometric shapes of the pyramids and the angles and the impact they have on resonance. Are we not talking about all that? Is
yeah,
the same thing?
I can clarify something there, and that is that angles and angels have the same letters. And so that's very
I love that.
I have a lot of those little anagrams, stones and tones. That's another big one. So what happens that when you change the angle, you literally bend light, whether you see the light or not, whether it's visible or invisible, you're bending light and therefore you're bending information. And you're, in other words, then the information can retune for the recipient, for the environment, for the time and space that
the information. It becomes interactive, right?
Yeah, tuned light. Mm-hmm. And so, for instance, let's just look at the Giza pyramid for a minute, because that's for most people the most famous of all of them, even though there's three of them that work together as a big tool, machinery. Looking at the Giza pyramid, if you look at the angle between one of the edges and the diagonal of the base, the floor, there's an angle in there. It's called the Aries angle. It's basically a 42-degree angle, and that's the angle when light goes through a prism and creates the rainbow spectrum. There's about 3 degrees, and they call it the 42-degree rainbow angle. Hmm. That's why when you're out in nature and you're looking at a rainbow, and all of a sudden, in a matter of seconds, the rainbow disappears. The reason why is because that angle is shifted outside of that little 3-degree window, and all of a sudden, you don't see it. I mean, same amount of moisture is in the sky. The sun is where it is. However, it got out of that tiny little window where the primary rainbow appears.
Hmm. But that rainbow has a resonant effect on us, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. The colors and, almost everybody is charmed by the rainbow. Mm-hmm. I haven't met many people in the world who aren't charmed by the presence of a rainbow. Mm-hmm. It brings out the magical child in people, and it's like the creator winking at us, and just smiling. Here's a storm, and all of a sudden there's a rainbow, and it brings hope to people all over. It's really very interesting. Mm-hmm. I convert those frequencies of the sunlight going through a quartz prism into 9 different colors, and I make tuning forks and chimes out of it. And there's 9 because there's 2 reds, a dark red and a lighter red, and a dark green and a lighter green. And other than that, it's the typical rainbow spectrum, but it's a very specific angle for each color and very specific wavelengths. And when I did that, and I'm on my chime, I take 3 of them out for a moment and play the others, and I get a major scale starting on the 7th note of a major scale, and it just lacks the 6th note of a major scale, la, like do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, si, do, or ti, do. It misses the note la. But the rest of it sounds like a perfectly comfortable major scale to people. It does not sound tweaky. Hmm. And this is something that I didn't adjust it to try to make it sound good. I just did the science on it purely 100%, made it, And then you listen to it, and here's this beautiful major scale out of, you know, 6 out of 7 notes out of the major scale. Hmm. Very interesting. And that's the primary rainbow. And of course, you can have secondary and tertiary, and extremely rarely, 4 rainbows. I can't think of anybody now that I know that's seen the 4 rainbows. And some have seen the triple rainbows, but each one has a different angle. Now, what's interesting about the Great Pyramid is that there's another angle in the pyramid, which is the slope down the middle of a face with the base. And that's the 51 degree, 0.8 something, 0.82, 0.85, depends on how you mathematically calculate the angle. And that creates the secondary rainbow. So, you know, what a metaphor for bending light, and for the rainbow is also a metaphor for the whole electromagnetic spectrum. Hmm. You know, people have said in certain texts that the Ark of the Covenant is the rainbow. And how I interpret that is meaning the whole electromagnetic spectrum. And this would go up into gamma rays and things that are beyond our perception. But I think that's one. Now, I'm not saying that that's everything that the words Ark of the Covenant mean. That's just one aspect of the Ark of the Covenant that's in the biblical literature even.
Let me ask you this. Is that's a huge influence on people. That can make people feel a lot better, right? So the healing force of those things, that's what I'm trying to bring into this. The awareness of the healing force in each of those is something you've studied a great deal, have you not?
Absolutely. Everything about it, the mathematics, the numbers, the sacred numbers, what they mean, which is a super deep form of numerology, a little different than some types of pop forms of numerology. I mean, this goes really deep into the harmonic matrix, origin of numbers, meaning of numbers across time to different cultures, what those numbers resonate with. I mean, that's an entire field. I last year did a whole workshop just all about all the sacred numbers. It was really, really fun.
You know a ton. Now, let's back up a little bit. You were talking about tuning forks as well, and you were talking about resonant objects retuning or harmonizing your home. And now we're talking about rainbows. And I wonder if you could give just a bit of an encapsulation or a thumbnail for people to understand how it would heal us, or how you use it, say, with tuning forks or with
When you objects. Say it, what part of the healing are you referring to, so I can properly
Well, it could respond. Be physical healing, couldn't it? And it could be sound.
No, are you thinking of the geometric object in the room, or what part am I really looking at here?
Okay, well, let's look at, for example, tuning forks.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I love tuning forks, and I've been teaching and working with them for, I don't know, 30 some years for applying them to quote unquote healing and balancing and harmonizing, because then you can sound a single frequency, for instance, with just one fork, and that acts like a key. And if you play the right frequency with the right intent in the right environment for the right reasons for the right person, you know, all of that stuff, even if you don't know everything about the rightness of it, you can basically open up a door into the Akashic records, into the field, and summon something. So,
like perhaps the root of the person's discomfort, or
it could, you know, maybe they have a blockage and you play a certain note. I know I played one of the frequencies over the phone to somebody, 4,303 hertz. Now, it's a half a step higher about than the highest note on an 88 key piano. And that's a frequency that Edward Ostrander, a scientist, discovered that's important for the creation of matter that comes out of the Milky Way.
Hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I played that over the phone. That person said, I have to study sound healing. And then they went out and bought gongs. And I mean, that they heard one tuning fork, one really precise note played on a tuning fork through a telephone. And telephones filter out a lot of stuff. So it's not like you're getting the best quality sound. In fact, it's generally not that good. Anyway, that fork for that person at that time in their life opened up a door, and all of a sudden they became interested in sound healing from one note.
Mm-hmm. I can now, sort of understand it sort of unlocked maybe a desire or an urge going on that was unnameable in the person, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
it
could have resonated something with their soul that we don't necessarily know the content of, mm-hmm. nor even the person, but it resonated enough that they took action, I mean, big action mm-hmm. on it. And so I apply these to all kinds of things. I could tell you about some of the other ones that I've been working with lately that with certain sacred numbers in them, that's really, really interesting. But here's a further story on that Milky Way, carrying it into music. And basically, I talked to a fellow from India who plays sitar, and I was doing a speech somewhere, presentation. He was in the audience, and we got to talking. And he said he had studied with Ali Akbar Khan.
Oh,
and
my. Mm-hmm.
I said, well, what note does Ali Akbar Khan like to tune to? And he said, well, I asked him. And he said he likes to tune to 268.8 hertz, 268.8. Well, a lot of meditation music in India is tuned to C sharps, although the technical name for that note is actually a D flat. But that's another matter that most people could care less about until they go deep enough into this where it actually matters. So for now, it fits. And the typical 88 centimeter length of a sitar is harmonious tuning it to a C sharp. So in Indian history, from India, there's a lot of times in history where their key note that they tuned to was a C sharp. They also did Cs, and earlier they had Ds, but a lot of time in our history, in recent history, there was a C sharp. So I thought, okay, that's very, very interesting, because I know others from India, masters, that are tuning to the C sharps.
Let me ask you something quickly. While you're talking about that, I'm going, well, does that tell us what that particular community is going to respond most to? You see what I mean? Is that interactive,
yeah.
that what people in India, for example, respond to?
There are cultural things in different times in history where for some reason a group of people of various sizes might find a unifying factor around a certain note, not necessarily a precise pitch, but let's just call them a bunch of different C sharps within a window where we can still call it C sharp. Mm-hmm. And that note has shown up in gongs from and Tibetan bowls and bells and things. And the earth year, tropical year journey around the, it's a orbit, a vortexing orbit. It's not really circular, or we'd have Groundhog Day every year, and we don't. So, you
thank
know,
heaven.
It's moving in a spiral and moving through space time. And anyway, the tropical year 365.242 days converts in a certain octave to sound 136.1022, so that'd be 272. Well, now see the 268, 272, it's all in that C sharp realm. And because of that, that note has become a nickname, the ohm.
Oh.
Which is because it's used a lot, and because of all the C sharps in India for meditating in Indian spiritual music, not necessarily Indian pop music, because they're doing a whole other thing with guitars and keyboards where they've, you know, gotten into tuning to A440 and equal temperament and completely out of the Indian scales.
Well, let's jump back to Om. Isn't that known as the sound of creation?
Yeah, and there's a lot of things with that Om. So here the misnomer is, okay, so a lot of people Om to the C sharps, okay? And you'll see Om tuning forks all over the place. After Hans Cousteau released his book, The Cosmic Octave, a lot of people started getting tuning forks tuned to the planets, and Acutonics built an entire sound healing system around the planetary tones mixed in with, acupuncture. And they're all certified acupuncturists. So they combine that with the acupuncture meridians and the meanings of the planet. So there's a metaphysical meaning to go with the planet that when you put it on acupuncture points on the body, you're introducing planetary influences into the meridians. And that's what they developed. I was working with the planetary tones long before they existed as a company.
Now, that's why you use the term universal song, right?
Yeah, that's the whole idea. Mm-hmm. And it is part of music of the spheres, but it doesn't mean music of the spheres means everything is circular or spherical, right? I mean, most people interpret that word music of the spheres and they think of planets and orbits. And here I am talking about planet and orbits, but it's about consciousness, including the music in ourselves, the music, whole universe created out of sound. So therefore you can't get away from it. You can ignore it.
So you have a vibrational print. You have a sound that's just you, right?
Everybody.
And I do. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that can be very complex, that part. And get back to that.
So some of your work is activating that. Okay. I don't want to forget that.
And
that's
when
really
you don't
exciting.
Know. I mean, I could play, I got a 1,000 tuning forks here. You know, I'm doing a workshop this weekend where we're exploring all kinds of harmonics of the whole field, you know. And, you know, I don't know, lead going into this workshop, who's going to respond to what. At any moment, I could play something and the room might vibrate more than it ever had because I played the right note. There was a right number of people in the room to change the resonance. And all of a sudden, some note just becomes very outstanding and people have some interesting experiences.
And maybe a shared intention or something, huh?
Yeah, and that definitely goes in there. I mean, there's a lot, you know, it's Jonathan Goldman's always saying, you know, sound plus intention equals healing. That's his formula. He quotes that a lot.
Do you agree with that?
To a point. It's more complex than that. And I give a lot of value to focus and intention. But that doesn't mean everybody using intention with sound is going to produce the effect that they would hope to produce. Mm-hmm. That gets a little bit more interesting because of the details. I mean, you don't want to stand next to a refrigerator and have your whole soul and energy field completely detuned because you leaned on a refrigerator while you were talking in the kitchen, you know?
No, yeah, you don't.
Right, but
let me just go back to one thing before you go. You're going to go on a little bit here, and I want you to, but I want to ask one question before we go away from it too far, which is we spoke of the sound of a sitar and a C sharp, I think you said. And,
yeah.
And I'm going, okay, so I'm just jumping for a sec out of curiosity. Say in Russia where they have all that amazing classical music, is that reference to a kind of frequency in and amongst that part of the world?
I had a past life in Russia. I feel a lot of affinity with things in Russia, and I've composed Russian music, but I've never studied any significant tone or single frequency that was outstanding in my research on Russian music.
Okay. So I was just wondering if that's a kind of a way that you get the national, influence in music. That was a sidebar, but I'm interested.
Okay. Well, it's impossible to get off the track here. Now you might think that I'm going all over the place, but
no, I don't. I just don't want to lose my track because I'm too curious.
Yeah, and I want to come back to the Milky Way and why, let me just say that right now, then I'll complete that. See, when you take that Milky Way 4,303 hertz down a bunch of octaves, you get 268.9375 exactly hertz. 268.9375. And what was the frequency that Ali Akbar Khan was doing? 268.8. I mean, yow, is Ali Akbar Khan so tuned into the sound current and the music of the spheres that he is hearing a lower octave of the Milky Way? I mean, that's what it suggests.
And so that's his beingness that has that intrinsically in his essence. Is that right?
Because
okay, wow.
When you listen correctly in the heart and your consciousness is open, any information in the Akashic records, you can access it, including Alexandria Library documents that have quote unquote been burned.
Hmm.
That doesn't mean that they got removed from the Akashic field.
Mm-hmm.
See? So anybody could tune in because of the heart's ability through the black hole that everybody has in their being, still point, zero point, place where they can talk to source at the highest level that's so far beyond the mind and the brain because you can get absolute truth on any level of realities from that level of heart, if you trust it and open it, it's far. But, you know, we didn't grow up in school where that was valued. You know, they
not at all.
Like, pumping information into our heads and how patting us on the head that we could regurgitate it back and then forget it later after we pass the test, you know, and that's all part of that, you know, the dumb down of the educational program and to get people to go along, get along and control. It's not about teaching people the value of their heart as a soul and a being and how profound truths anybody can gather about anything from that heart space. Mm-hmm. And so you see the problems, a lot of the problems in the world is because that has not been valued. People are valued for what they know and what they do and the amount, what kind of papers they have on their wall.
And how much they make.
Yeah, all that noise. Mm-hmm. And not valued for being nice and quiet over there in the classroom, radiating love to the whole classroom. And everybody feels it, but nobody knows where it's coming from. You know, you follow?
How did you wake up to that? Were you born that way, Randy?
I think, you know, I came in an interesting way. And then conditions were such that I had to, you know, shut down many things until it was, quote unquote, safe to open up again. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, we survive. You come in like wide awake. I was like 2 and 3 years old going with my parents to see the floor shows in Las Vegas.
Oh my. Where
I was born and my uncle built the hotels and I got to see everybody. But that wasn't a noisy crybaby kid. I was funny and entertaining and it was a kick for them to bring me to the floor shows. So, you know, okay. That's a little maybe unusual for some kids that age. Instead of sitting home with the babysitter doing whatever, you know, I was there seeing some of the best musicians in the world. And, you know, we could go on. It gets a little strange there. So I will not connect that dot too deep here.
But I think you are saying, well, the reason I asked that is you are saying it's in there, it's intrinsic. And some of us are shut down for a long time.
Yeah.
So what opened it up again? That's kind of interesting for people.
Well, it's a series of events and some of them might be wanted events, unwanted events, dreams, interactions with people who held a key and would do certain things or say things.
And you became a musician too.
And once I started composing, which is like 1966 when I was in high school, that opened up channels. And then later on I did channeling. I used to use a puppet and do channeling there was just too much noise in the field and I decided to not do that. Mm-hmm. All got opened up from the composing where I opened up the channels. And then when those channels are open, I could hear all kinds of information. And it was a real deep heart space that I went to in that channeling work. And then that ultimately led to me going to deeper places in the music. So it worked both ways. So that was part of it. And hearing certain musicians, having certain dreams, out-of-body experiences, full light body experiences, you know, turning into light and not knowing how did it happen.
Wow, isn't that wonderful? Can you do that again? Can you do it now?
I'm working on it.
That's the thing, that stuff closes over.
What a bummer. You know, you have these experiences and you try to duplicate them. Then it sets you off on this path of trying to duplicate something where you get an experience of yourself far beyond the confines of being stuffed into a body, being a much more expanded being. And then it doesn't happen again like that. And then
if you use your resonances, can you not use those to open the doorway to different dimensions after?
Yeah, I'm working on it. And sharing things, and people are benefiting.
Good.
But some of those light experiences have not happened to like they did, where it lit up the room and things happened, you know. So I'm working on it. I'm looking for the tones. I have done a lot of research on that. I'm investigating everywhere because it's our right to wake up and be illumined beings in a physical vehicle rather than having forgotten like the living conditions and the programmed thought field is not to have humans wake up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
who programs this?
You know, a lot of interesting beings with various agendas that did not, you know, wanted a bunch of slaves down here and not ones that woke up. Like mm-hmm. they say that in the Bible. Look, we got to watch what we're doing lest they become like us. It's mm-hmm. right there in that part of the literature.
Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm.
Because we have that God spark that humans have that not necessarily all creatures have, that a certain kind of light quotient that and beings from all over the galaxy are very curious about humans because of a certain quality of light that's buried in us that can get ignited. And some people, it gets ignited and it gets grounded enough and stabilized where it doesn't go away. Others have experiences that are fleeting, and then they spend their life chasing those experiences, trying to get back there, you know?
But if you do resonant living, Randy, do you have more and more accord and harmony deep within the essence of your being and your light, in that it could retrain yourself to open up to it, even though the densities are holding you down like the rest of us?
Yeah, and to keep it open, and not that you have to go around showing it on a need-to-know basis. Sometimes you can just seem like pretty normal because that's what you need. And other times, you've got to turn up the juice for something that's needed or wanted in the world, or an emergency or something. Mm-hmm. You know, like a mother who lifts the car up so it doesn't roll over her child who's playing on the driveway. Where, you know, that on a need-to-know basis, someone taps into a much greater power than they ever thought, you know. And so we work on things so that also the things that are happening in the world don't detune us, and we don't empathize to the point where we get dimmed down because of what we observed.
So I want to ask one more question, because the things that are going on in the world right now are very turbulent, fast action, a lot of destructive, fear-based stuff. But I keep hearing that we can keep our concentration, keep bringing the light through, keep shifting our resonance, and we can have alternative realities. We don't have to be in existence in the 3D reality, which is so full of turmoil right now. Is that right?
Yeah, in the world, but not of the world, mm-hmm. but grounded enough for the higher circuitry to work so that our circuits don't get burned out and so that we don't burn out other circuits. I mean, look at Yeshua, Jesus, after the resurrection. You know, he says, you know, don't touch me because I'm not in my earthly garment. He, in other words, his electrical or electromagnetic circuitry was so lit up that it would have burned people out. They might not have survived going up and hugging him at that point, because he had to ground it and become stable in this environment with a higher circuitry than the normal. And people are not used to beings of that level of light. It's too strong for their circuits. So we're getting circuitry, and we have to keep the circuits going while they're getting up leveled, which is an interesting thing to me. In other words, we don't get to go up on the mothership and then they in a dream state or whatever, and they redo our circuits and we wake up the next day, you know, and all the electrical system like in a house has changed. Mm-hmm. All the old funky wiring has all been redone, you know. All the lead pipes and the water pipes are all changed over to conscious water pipes. No, we have to keep trucking, working, doing all the things that we're doing while these adjustments are being made, and then show up at work and not be so goofy that, you know, it becomes a detriment to our job, mm-hmm. so to speak. Mm-hmm. I mean,
because those people that have a great deal of light are often scary to people who have no interest or no experience with that.
Yeah, and it reflects things in them, shadows in them that they don't want to look at, which they can get uncomfortable. They want the love, but yet that love reflects where they don't love themselves, or where they put it aside, or where they turn their backs on themselves in this or another life or parallel life, and all of a sudden that light is illuminating something, and then they get uncomfortable and get angry at the person who's illuminating it. And so one sometimes needs to be very careful of what gets pointed out because, you know, not everybody takes that feedback with grace.
Right.
Even if the person who is sharing the feedback is very loving and considerate and compassionate, still the uncomfortableness can bother people. And, you know, when you have a certain level of light showing, you show up on a lot of screens that you might not necessarily prefer to show up on. And beings with various agendas know who you are and they can see you, and they're attracted to it. They also want to dim it. Mm. Like moths to a flame, you know, but there's those who want to dim it and keep you from moving to the next level that your illumination has qualified you for, if it's grounded enough for you to go into other dimensions without disturbing those dimensions.
So you become a problem to those who would like to keep the status quo the way it is, right?
Yes. Well, yeah, look around. Look at some of the comedians who had just brilliant things to say, you know, couched in comedy that right. helped a lot of people get it that would not have gotten it, you know, Sunday in church being preached at, you know, but they could laugh. And all of a sudden the laughter opened up a portal where they could laugh at themselves and things. And there's a lot of brilliance. You know, the jokers were often the ones in the ancient courts who survived, where the spiritual advisor, if he told the king, queen, something he didn't want to hear, that may have been their last job.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So
anyway,
that's so fascinating. And I want to just throw us back to Egypt just for a moment. Was it sound that built the pyramids, Randy?
I feel, yeah. And they're built to work with sound, to focus sound, to project it, to, yeah. I feel that almost all of it can be built with a combination of sound and light working together. Mm-hmm.
Even though there are huge lumps of dirt that are having to be moved, or stone, yeah?
Well, having to be moved, but they could be moved with sound.
Yeah.
They could be vibrated to where they float in place, and you just take a single finger and you push a super ton block into place because the gravity has been suspended with the sound.
Mm-hmm.
I also believe in the possibility of precipitating a monument from a higher blueprint world and then causing it to condense and precipitate to where it becomes a solid object here.
So where would that world be? Would it just be in a different realm, like in a different vibrational reality?
Yeah. Uh-huh. A higher vibration. That's not not a 3D, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 10, whatever dimensional level, mm-hmm. where that blueprint is absolutely perfected. And then the beings would have to know, how do you step it down? See, there's beings that are called masters of the net. And the net, like in the fishing story with Jesus, is the fabric of space-time, the net.
Okay. All right.
And masters of the net, you know, Athena is a master of the net from the Greek mysteries. She sat, the woman, Tahuti, Toth, lots of famous beings who could manifest realities, manipulate realities, shapeshift realities. In other words, they had control over matter and space-time.
Mm-hmm.
And those were called masters of the net.
And they've come through over and over with different names, have they not?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so they have the ability to manipulate the electromagnetic field in different domains, depending on their station in life and what they've qualified for, what their directive is. And so on. And so often the masters of the net resonate with the number 8, like Jesus 888, Lord Jesus Christ in Greek is the number 888. And at Toth, one of his numbers is 88. And he, you know, that also 66, but, you know, also for him, he had like three numbers. The other one was the square root of 240, which is, okay, what's that? You know.
So, for example, wasn't Hermes Thoth?
And they had the same
numbers. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And there's other numbers that go with them. I mean, in the Greek mysteries, Hermes' number was 353, and Zeus was 612. Apollo was 1,061. Now, those are rounded off to whole numbers. They actually come from some very interesting square roots where the numbers go on forever, but they're rounded up to those whole numbers.
When they're reincarnated or come in as a different one, they have the same numbers. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's an interesting question. They may, depending on their directive. So there could be the continuous soul that in an incarnation has a different name and maybe some different job descriptions, where the number has to support the job description. Then there may be a soul number underneath that no matter what incarnation, that soul number follows them everywhere.
Well, that's interesting. Huh?
Metatron has a couple different numbers, but the main one I like with him is 314, which is the first three digits of pi, P-I. Okay. Yeah, 314. That's his Kabbalistic number. So that's very interesting. Now, whether Metatron is always that, It depends. Now, he's out of the great central sun. So,
well, I guess what you're saying, you say whether he's always that, I'm going, oh, I guess they have tremendous flexibility and there's no time and space and no controls on what they can do. Is that right?
Yeah. And they operate under huge directives. I mean, some say that, you know, Metatron is the creator of the super electron, of which realities are built out of that, and that's emanating out of the great central sun. That is quite a job description.
Wow.
You know?
And how old are they? And what is death to beings like that? And what is death to us? That's a huge question. Are you willing to answer that, Randy?
I can respond, but I wouldn't dare answer. But I can respond. Okay. I don't think death is their level of infinity. And let me see what.
You know what? It's interesting, though, isn't it?
That's not a terminal thing in that that level of reality. Mm-hmm. You know, there may be different rebirths. They may choose. Some of them have chosen to be born into different archaic incarnations on different planets, different star systems at different times. But those immortal kind of beings, it's not like a death. I mean, the oldest man living now, I've heard, over in the Himalayas, is like 4,000 years old.
Yes, I've read about that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, okay, that's not about death. I mean, they've conquered that. I mean, some of the initiations in the Great Pyramid were all about conquering death. So that's not even in the equation.
Wow, isn't that amazing?
Drop a body, but consciously dropping a body for a different form for a different reason doesn't mean there's any death experience at all.
Well, death takes on a different meaning entirely then, as far as I can see, is just transition, isn't it?
Yeah.
A chosen transition.
Yeah, and a sense of a continuity before and after. You know, who you are at the beginning of creation, who you will become, and these little transitions in and out of lifetimes and different personalities, different bodies, all this stuff, but not at all is death dimming your light. It's that light is just is constant.
Is the resonance, does the resonance have much to do with the identity? Meaning, back to this similar question, which is, when you leave and go to something else, will you keep the same resonance?
I would hope to merge personally with the highest resonance that I have that has not been compromised through any experiences, but has only been enhanced with greater wisdom from the experiences, but not chipped away to where it's a compromised field, and that I would embrace the greater divine blueprint out of which I was created, and then come back to that blueprint with the blueprint smiling, because I had experiences and it only contributed rather than chipped away at it, you know?
Oh, how wonderful. Wow. Can we all do that? Or is it just because you're a sound healer wizard kind of guy?
No, I know it's in the spark that we were given. Now, whether we wake up to it and start doing something about it and work on it and get out the consensus realities, beliefs like death, all that stuff was introduced into the programming and the DNA of humans. We don't have to go along with that, but it was, you know, built into the DNA. So people think it's inevitable. A lot of that stuff is just a bunch of programs.
Ah.
Yeah, when you don't have that program, it's not playing out. It's not running. You have different software, and the hardware behaves differently.
That's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah, but, you know, we have the choice in this life or not. I used to say that some people were having, like, the volleyball life, you know, working away on stuff, and they're out there every day. You wonder, do they work? They're playing volleyball every day. They're going to parties all the time. This could be an R&R life, because in the last time life, they were doing Star Wars and fighting battles on other planets, and it was a bit tiring, and they never did get an R&R, you know. So this life, they decide to be born on this planet where they can play volleyball till their ripe old age, you know.
I love that we can be choosing to be born on different planets. That's wonderful. And we choose our life, right?
Yeah, and for different reasons. Mm-hmm. And we can be born on this life with knowledge from other stardust. We're stardust material. And sometimes that stardust material gets activated so we can bring inventions that are worked out other places and bring them here to help. you know, like Tesla and people, you know, where did these things come from that previously, as we know, other than ancient history that's been forgotten, but in the timeline that most people are somewhat familiar with, where do they get this? Mm-hmm. Well, I think when they go out into that field where all possibilities are existing and there's a purpose for bringing through a certain invention, you know, it's there in the air. And that's why a lot of people get the same invention at the same time. Once it becomes tuned into possibility of manifestation here, it's now available for people all over the world, including out in the jungles, who don't even have a cell phone, to get something.
Now, would they have to have the right kind of frequency to draw that particular idea, concept, invention down?
Right? I generally think that. Yeah. There are some whose behaviors are kind of interesting, and I wonder, you know, but maybe they had all the other frequencies that they had were sufficient for that mission, in spite of having a few little tweaks in the field, you might say, mm-hmm. you know, where their ego could have gotten in there, or something happened where their behavior, you would say, why do they qualify for bringing this through when they act like this or that? Mm-hmm. And who they are, they may have forgotten, but the bigger who they are probably has all those resonances. And the temporary earth suit version of them is a bit of a mix.
Hmm.
Well, we have to smile at the cartoons of the reality, cosmic level reality TV show going on.
You know? So tell me this, do we always have to be a war species, Randy?
Nope. Okay. That's a program. That is put in into a program put into the field that plays out because it was introduced into the field.
To dull our love, right?
Uh-huh. And exactly.
Isn't that amazing?
Light and keep us busy harming creation rather than honoring creation and enhancing creation through all aspects of our presence. Dancing with creation, you know, now, you know, a lot of creation is being destroyed because of beliefs in that.
Mm-hmm.
That whole all the wars are bankers' wars, as we know, as most people know. No, not most people. Some people are beginning to understand where that's coming from.
Heroics doesn't have much to do with war. Now, this is a sidebar, but I've known Randy for quite a while. And Randy, you've told some stunning stories jumping back into Egypt. One of them that I kind of remember, or I flash on periodically, is about being in a chamber in the Great Pyramid and a blue light. Would you mind telling a bit of that story?
Well, basically, I was up there with Paul Hubbard, and we were co-leading. It was my second trip to Egypt, and we were preparing the room for a ceremony in the king's chamber, and everybody else was running around in the pyramids early in the morning. And so I had plenty of time to myself. And my first trip there, I got sick and didn't even get to go into the pyramid, and I was co-leading the trip. So this time I say, okay, I'm making up for that. So I'm laying in the sarcophagus, chanting, just making sounds, no particular syllables that I have to do or mantras. I'm just trying to find the groove in the sound.
You mean the resonance, the correct resonance to match? Yeah,
for the room. Mm-hmm. And I know the mathematics of the room and the resonances, but at that point I was trying to find it in my body and merge with it.
Oh, good.
And I did, and all the electricity in the pyramids went out. The Egyptian officials didn't know how that happened. And then the blue light formed on the ceiling, which is that blue light that holds the whole, our universe is held in blue light. It's a type of Christed light that the divine feminine holds. It's why you see a lot of beings in blue light around them in paintings, because it's that blue light that is the particular qualities and resonances of light that holds the field for our entire universe's reality to exist.
Wow. Okay. I hadn't realized that.
And when you look at cells in the in any life forms in our universe, let's say, under an electron microscope, the nucleus of the cells have a little blue pilot light, mm-hmm. electric blue-white pilot light going. And if you can ignite that light, you can have healing on a mental, physical, spiritual, any level, or all those levels at the same time. And I studied that for years.
When you say ignite that light, do you mean really get it big, get it going, get it glowing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I studied that with Bob Rasmussen, who had mastered how to heal with that. He could fix broken bones. So you broke a bone and he got right to you. He could correct that right on the spot.
Wow.
And because you need a certain quality of energy generally to do this. Now, I've practiced, I've had birds fly into plate glass windows and, you know, help bring them back by running that energy, because animals are really responsive to that. Mm-hmm. So what you do, all of those out there in listening land, mm-hmm. here, you breathe in through your nose to the count of five, and you exhale to the count of 30, but you purse your lips when you exhale to create resistance. Now, you have to find your rhythm. How fast you breathe, you breathe at a steady rate. The inhale and exhale is at the same tempo. You have to find the tempo. And if you're not a wind musician playing wind instruments, you may not have developed that discipline in breathing. But if you purse your lips, you should be able to create enough resistance to build the energy. Then you visualize, starting with your feet, like all the particles in your body are turning into electric blue-white lights, and it's coming up from your feet. So what you look like is like you're beaming up on Star Trek, except that the color is electric blue-white, cobalt blue with the white in it. That's what it looks like. And you look just, you know, I mean, it doesn't swirl around your body like on Star Trek. But, you know, you're made out of those particles. And I've had full light body experience where I did completely turned into that light completely.
Wow.
And it was
that
it,
wonderful?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. At the time, though, I had not taken the class from Bob, who was my friend and mentor, and how to do it, or I might have been able to continue breathing and stay in that space. Once I got to that realm, when that happened, I could get information on anything. All I had to do was think of something, like I knew who he was in a past life, and I told him. And I told the others who were in the room when this happened, who witnessed it, and it was right. Now, I didn't know that before, but I was in that zone where all you have to do is think of something and the information is there. It's not secreted away from you because you're in that merging with all of it. Hmm. So I had the thought.
It's a huge resonant shift, isn't it?
Oh, it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Now, when you want to transfer that to a creature or something you're tuning, you use your thumb, your forefinger, and your middle finger, that tripod that you see so often in mudras in meditation, mm-hmm. and you touch the person or the thing with that, like your jumper cables on a service vehicle when the battery is down in a car and it puts jumper cables. Well, your arms are acting as the jumper cables. And then you learn how to touch different circuit points on the body and run that circuitry. And that's like a person who's having a challenge. The lights are not lit up enough in them. They're not running enough of that light. It's been diminished, like pilot lights dimming in a furnace. Hmm. So what you're doing, you're acting as a big generator for that light. And it doesn't deplete your own light doing it because it's the creator's light. And you have to be clear about that so you don't think you're doing it. You know, mm-hmm. you're a vehicle that's spliced in between the creator and whoever you're working on. You know, so you don't take credit. Okay. You follow?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because
these and more shall you do in the name of the Father, right?
Yeah, exactly. Whenever two or more gather, but just because you gather doesn't mean good stuff's going to happen. There's a lot of characters who gather and good stuff doesn't happen. So right. You have to have the right interpretation wherever two or more gathered. Yeah, certainly with the right intention and the right heart space, right?
Yeah, so when you were in the pyramid, we're going to have to end this, and I want to make sure you get to that point of being in the pyramid and what happened.
Well, I mean, so that light happened on the ceiling, mm-hmm. and I noted that, and all the electricity was out, so it was totally dark, and then the ceiling is glowing, and I thought, wow, this is very interesting. See, my belief is that the right sounds in the right rooms in those and other pyramids around the world, and a lot of countries, these rooms and monuments are tuned to sound, but they're also tuned to the signatures of beings as well. So you have to have the right code in your voice. It's not like you could just put a mechanical generator in there and generate that tone and it's going to happen. I don't think so. I think there has to be that other heart space that's not digital, it's not mechanical, that's run from the heart, that's plugged into the heart in creation.
Aha. Uh-huh. And not everybody can do it automatically anyway.
Yeah, or they may have other agendas going on that would be a good idea for them not to be able to do that, because they would not be respecting the reality that they could be influencing. Hmm. You've got to have the reality has to feel more love from what you're doing.
So when you were doing the blue light breathing, how long were you breathing? When you were in the sarcophagus, you were...
It only took me a few minutes.
Oh, really?
I was making sound, yeah, and then boom, that happened.
And
yeah,
you were chanting, right?
I was, yeah, like oming and, you know, I wasn't trying to find the, well, you know, om and hue. I think I explored those two syllables as being especially profound, hue and om. And I was doing those back and forth just to see if one or the other helped the whole situation.
And
that's
it did.
All. I wasn't doing any Egyptian thing, you know.
But it's a very exciting kind of, I mean, I would love to rush over there and do that, but I realize it'd take a little more practice maybe.
Well, and, you know, things happen to people there and have happened on our tour. We were doing a big ceremony at the Sekhmet temple where there's a statue of Sekhmet off in this room that like a lot of public wouldn't even know. It's not even an interesting place on the outside. You wouldn't even think to go there unless a tour guide took you there. And here's this big black basalt statue of Sekhmet. I mean, really powerful. And it's at a powerful place in Egypt where the statue like does acupuncture for the whole grid in Egypt through that statue, the whole Sekhmet. Okay. So we're doing ceremonies and I'm inside conducting the ceremony. And that room is filling up with blue light from what we were doing also, which was interesting.
How amazing.
And there was a woman outside on our tour who was having some challenges. So one of these, Egyptian priests wearing turbans and robes was out there helping her, and he was standing behind her and she was having a breakdown of some kind. Okay. Mm-hmm. And he walked through her body.
Wow.
He was standing behind her, walked right through her body. The other people on the tour, they saw it.
Hmm.
I mean, you know, who's this guy and where does he go at night? And does he live in the underground Acropolis there, Giza, the underground city? Where does he go? This is not a regular dude.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I mean,
and was she healed?
Well, you know, she got benefit from all of that, but she had stuff was coming up for her to where that priest stopped everything else he was doing and attended to her. Mm. Something got triggered, you might say.
Mm-hmm. So she really fleshed open in many ways.
Yeah.
Well, Randy, we have to end this. I wish we didn't, because I just want to keep asking you questions and enjoying the broad spectrum of what you've brought with resonance. You've taken us around the world and into ourselves.
We did really good. Not talking about anything I thought we were going to talk about. So bless your heart. I like that.
You know, that's my style. That's your style. Tell people how to find you, Randy.
Okay, well, I'm on Google Maps, but I'm at universalsong.net is my older website, universalsong.net, and my email is universalsong@yahoo.com, and I'm on Randolphin on Facebook, and randy.masters.official or randymasters.official on Facebook. And I do post educational things. I don't post pictures of food and meals and selfies. I post information about any of the different things that are going on in the universe and make comments that some people might find interesting.
Good.
You know, so it's part of my spirit work.
And here's a little boost and a boast about you, Randy. I always wear every day, because it's fairly big, a crystal necklace that you designed, and it says it's one earth for all of us with ET writing, and it's kind of my signature piece. I've had more people reach out and talk about that, so I want to attribute that to you. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I'm making some more. They can see examples of some of them. I have some new ones which we don't have pictures of, and some new things being made that will be up there and on the new website. But all that jewelry is tuned, all the angles and the cuts and the facets and the stones and the colors and the metals that are used, it's all harmonically tuned.
And they're very beautiful, and they have an amazing power. And this is Veronica Entwistle saying, as much as I hate to do it, I have to say thank you for listening. Tune in again, and this will be podcasted very soon. So thank you, Randy Masters.
You're welcome. Thank you, Veronica. You always ask the greatest questions, you know.
I've had such a good time with you.